You're listening to Insight. One could argue there's probably no animal on Earth with a worse public relations problem than the bat. While they're engineering marvels, the only mammal to master the art of flight, if you simply mention bats, a lot of people get the willies. According to legend, they'll fly into your hair. And the Hollywood image of a bat entering an open window to morph into Count Dracula surely hasn't helped their cause. But the reality is, bats are allies in man's war on insect pests. And hundreds of thousands of bats roost under the Yolo Causeway on Interstate 80. Joining us to educate us about these furry flyers is Corky Quirk. She's, in fact, an environmental educator for the Yolo Basin Foundation and the founder of NorCal Bats, a nonprofit organization devoted to bat conservation. Conservation, I meant to say. Welcome to Insight, Corky.
Thank you.
Can we start out by clearing up some of these misconceptions about bats, starting with the fact that almost all of them eat insects or, in some cases, fruit, and that while vampire bats do exist, they don't dine on humans, they don't suck blood, and they don't live in the U.S.?
That's very true. Of the 1,100 different kinds of bats in the world, 70% of them only eat bugs. And in the United States, our bats eat bugs. Unless you go to the zoo, you're not going to find even a fruit bat.
Yes, I think you have to go to Australia if you want to see those large those creatures eating them, the mangoes and the
That's right.
in the public parks. Okay, misconception, they fly into people's hair.
Bats not only can see with their eyes, but they also have echolocation. And unless you happen to have a bug flying around you, they're really not interested in you. They're able to make out those fine details, such as our hair. And it's just really bad luck if you happen to flip your ponytail.
And oddly enough, Mark Jones did tell a story yesterday. He was in a tent when he was some years back, and a bat got in there and did, by accident, wind up in someone's hair. But it was just one of those things, fluky thing. And as you say, they're not blind.
No, not blind at all. In fact, they see as well as we do. They see in black and white, and in low light, like dusk, they see considerably better than we do.
I've heard things about how good their echolocation is, and I think scientists are still sort of amazed at how well they can localize in pitch black.
Their sound, which we also call sonar and echolocation, is used for putting out the sound waves, and then they receive it back into their ears, and they get an image in their brain of what they're seeing in front of them. And that's quite good for close range work. Our military studies it, trying to figure out how the animals can do that.
Let's talk about the Yolo Causeway here. There's a colony of free-tailed bats, and I was surprised to know these animals actually migrate south, like some people do, to winter in Mexico or South America.
You bet. There's about 250,000 Mexican free-tailed bats that live underneath the causeway. The largest group of them is a maternal colony. This time of year, the males live in little bachelor colonies, and the females get together in these large maternal colonies. So the bats, when they return in the spring, come to the Yolo Causeway and many other bridges and lots of other places throughout the United States, southern part of the United States mostly.
But the causeway is the females and their young.
The largest portion of the bats under there are the females, and then they have
different colonies. The guys are in one spot and the women are elsewhere?
They sure are.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. Once you become old enough to be reproductively mature, if you're a guy, you got to go hang out with the bachelors. Come wintertime, when they return to Mexico, then they all live together in the caves.
And evidently they do, because the females all come back pregnant.
They do. They come back pregnant, and they have their pup. Each mom has just one baby a year, and she'll have her baby in about the very beginning of July, usually, here in California. And then the baby will spend about 6 weeks nursing, and then it'll learn to fly and join mom out on the evening bug hunt.
And I want to talk about that in a minute, because I had a chance to witness that phenomenon. It's really quite something. But I guess that they like the causeway because those expansion joints the engineers for Caltrans built into the bottom of it just happened to be the right size for the bat to crawl up?
They didn't know it when they were building it, but they built just absolutely perfect bat box material underneath the Yolo Causeway. The expansion joints are between 3/4 of an inch and an inch wide, and they're about 12 inches deep, 20 feet up off the ground. Over water much of the year, even if there isn't water directly below them, the ponds are around, the farmlands and rice fields. It's perfect habitat for the Mexican free-tail.
I guess we're used to seeing birds take off by sort of getting a running start a lot of times, or just taking a leap. But the bat sort of, I guess it goes into free fall and then starts flying.
They do. They need about a 6-foot area to fall in order to get good flight. And so if a bat's on the ground, it's going to scurry over, try to find its way up, back up on something so that it can take off properly.
Well, I have no doubt that a lot of people have actually seen this colony, maybe didn't realize what they were looking at, because if you're driving along the causeway more or less about dusk, this cloud comes out from underneath, and it's the bats, this huge colony.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they're driving over it's the Yolo Wildlife Area that's there underneath the freeway, think that it's blackbirds or something other, some other kind of grouping of birds that are coming out. And no, indeed, it's the bats making a very long ribbon. They go up very high into the sky and then disperse out all over the place.
I mean, it looks like a dust devil. This ribbon, is that what it is? This huge mm-hmm. column of little furry creatures.
Yes, you bet.
I noticed when I got a chance to observe this phenomenon that it was very peculiar what they were doing. They were swirling underneath the causeway, and then they would sort of form the column and then go out. And I guess
they
do. Why do they do that?
We think that that's because for 50 million years these bats lived in caves, and so it's kind of like coming out the mouth of the cave. They're coming out over one particular tree. It's the same kind of phenomenon that's seen at other bridges. The bats are spread out for about a quarter mile underneath the causeway there, but they all fly to this one destination, and then they come out in a large group. Also helps with predators. You know, maybe they'll eat you, not me.
I suppose it's like schooling in a fish. You hope,
exactly.
Hope it, you know, the buddy system. Hope it eats your buddy.
Yeah,
you.
That's right.
And I gather, too, Corky, that these bats are actually going up to 10,000 feet?
They can, yeah. They're going up and chasing the migratory moths. And so they get some real good snacks up there. They also come down around the farm fields. It's not uncommon for a Mexican free-tailed bat to go 40, 50 miles from its roost in a night to hunt, and then they come back. If it's a mom and she's nursing, she may not go quite that far because she has to come back several times.
Well, you know, you don't think of a gnat or a mosquito as being too much of a meal. So how many of these things do the bats have to eat to quell their hunger?
Different species of bats eat different kinds of bugs. Mexican free-tailed bats will eat mosquitoes, but their favorite are the moths. A little bigger food source. Adult male will eat about half his weight. A pregnant or nursing female will eat the equivalent of her full weight each night in insects.
Wow.
And that's a lot of bugs. So, you know, if you have a choice between a moth or a mosquito and you have to eat that much weight, you know, I'm going to go for the bigger one.
I noticed, too, that as the gnats, mosquitoes were all sort of flying around, they had to run two gauntlets. They had to get past the dragonflies and the bats. I noticed the bats had no interest in the dragonfly being. Looks like the bug looked almost as big as the animal.
The dragonfly is pretty darn close to the size of a Mexican free-tailed bat. And so, yeah, they don't tangle with each other.
Well, I don't know if anybody – did you hear that? Corky, you rescue bats as a hobby, and I wanted to ask people about you know, their size compared to like a mouse, a house mouse or pet mouse people are familiar with. But you've brought along several of them here, and maybe you can just kind of describe for us what you've got in that little box.
Yeah, I have a few of the babies because they're still – would be nursing if they were with mom, but they're orphans. They fell from a building in downtown Sacramento, and the roost was too high up to get them back. And when they're born, they're about between a quarter and a third of mom's size, so she's not able to carry them. They're too big.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at full grown, a Mexican free-tailed bat's not much bigger than my thumb, and so they're really little guys.
And they're really quite a bit smaller than like your pet mouse.
They would be, yeah. And actually, they're much more similar to a human than they are to a mouse. They're in an order all by themselves.
People think of them as rodents, then.
Yeah, they're not.
Absolutely not.
Not rodents.
No.
Rodents are in an order, and we're in an order, and the bats are in an order all by themselves.
Well, let's talk a bit about something that's really important. Some people will encounter a bat on the ground. You mentioned how if they don't get off the ground, they don't fly properly, you might find them there. But it's important to people to keep in mind that they shouldn't pick one up.
This is true. Any wild animal. One wouldn't approach a raccoon that was snarling at you. You shouldn't deal with cats and dogs that we don't know. And just like that, we shouldn't pick up a bat. If a bat is on the ground, there's something wrong. It doesn't belong there. And so we don't want you to have skin contact with it. If you want the animal to be rescued, be sure to wear gloves. You can put it in a box. You can just cover it and call a wildlife rescue group. And for most of those groups, you'll end up being directed back to me and to the group that I work with because there's not a lot of us that specialize in bats.
Yeah. I know that rabies is a fear of a lot of people, and bats are capable of carrying the disease, but I gather that in dealing with a lot of the sick bats as you do, it's not encountered that often.
For a bat in the roost, it's about the same as any other mammal. It's about 1 in 1,000. But a bat on the ground, it's about 1 in 10. So when we do get bats into care, first they're kept separate, they're quarantined. We watch. Volunteers also have had their pre-exposure vaccines from rabies so that we have some initial protection, but wearing gloves and protecting ourselves in other ways is the number one.
It's also an idea to keep your pet dog or cat vaccinated because, of course, if a bat was sick, they could encounter one. And
you bet. It's also the reason why, in the United States, dogs are not our biggest issue. In many countries where they don't vaccinate, dogs actually are the biggest fear for rabies to humans.
Just as a plug, it comes up a lot of times in clinic and things. People ask about a dog bite, and really the dog you're worried about is the dog that's acting very strangely, trots out of nowhere, bites you, and then disappears. That's where you got a problem.
That's where you got a problem with the dog. Bats don't behave in the same way when they're sick. They become very lethargic. They shut down. They don't typically become aggressive, and they don't foam at the mouth. So just because it looks calm doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. If it's on the ground, it's sick, injured, or an orphan. There's something wrong.
And these little babies you brought along here, what do you feed these guys?
Well, these guys are still on formula because bats are mammals. So they would drink milk from their mom. And they're getting to the point now where they'll be moving over into kind of a formula mealworm mix. And then eventually
a puree, I take it.
It is because that's what I'm able to do for
okay.
them.
Okay, all right.
And
whatever
then
works.
They learn to eat insects, enter the flight cage, get strong, and then they will return to their colonies and go back out and eat insects.
Well, they do eat insects. People have talked about the desirability of having them near you, building bat houses and such. But I understand it's a little bit trickier than maybe people sometimes realize.
You know, bat houses can be very successful. It takes time and patience. Proper building is important, but most important is location. Bat house needs to be 12 to 20 feet up off the ground. They do well if they're against something like a building. Bats in California won't go into a bat house in a tree. The temperature fluctuates too much. And also the predators can go right up the tree and clean out the bat house. So that doesn't work. A lot of times, they won't be occupied until there's a reason for the bats to move from their other roost. So if there's an exclusion or, you know, an accident of some kind, and then all of a sudden your bat house becomes occupied.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. I guess California's bat population is holding its own, and because if people do, if they find them in abandoned buildings and the like, they call in people to remove them.
Depends on the species.
Mm-hmm.
Species like the Mexican free-tailed bats have learned to interact quite well in human areas. Just like many of our other wildlife, some have done okay. And others that are not able to interact as well around humans are on the decline. About 50% of the bats nationwide, species-wise, are on the decline.
But then if they were cleaned out of a shopping center or some abandoned building or something, then they might be looking for your bat house in your backyard, I guess.
They might be. And there's some very ethical ways of going about having bats excluded from a building. And, you know, I may care a lot about the animals, but I also understand why you might not want it living in your attic.
Fair enough. Well, Corky, where can people go for more information on conservation of bats?
For information about the bats themselves, norcalbats.org is a website which gives information about California bats and all. The yolobasin.org website gives information about the tours in the Yolo Wildlife Area that we do about every other week. Tonight is one, and then our final one will be in September.
All right. I hope you can get a bigger venue. Last year I tried to attend, and I couldn't get in, so I hope you can really – there's going to be a lot of interest in this. It's very, very interesting to see.
Our building is limited in size. You know, the fire marshal will only let us have a certain number in. Everybody can come into the causeway, though, and watch. We go into an area that's not open to the general public, and so people do have to be on the tour in order to come.
All right, and I would encourage people to do just that. Our guest has been Corky Quirk, founder of NorCal Bats. Corky, thanks for speaking with us, and keep up the good work.
You bet. Thanks a lot.